The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
Maeve Fearick from Ballinrobe in County Mayo had been enjoying life in Australia. She was working as a bar manager, raising her little boy, Noah. However, Maeve's world was turned upside down last December when she was diagnosed with incurable stage 4 skin cancer. At 25 years of age, Maeve moved back to Ireland with her 3-year-old son so she could spend her final few months with her family and friends. However, she says that her life has been shortened by coming home to the Irish health system. Maeve Fearick joins me now. Morning, Maeve.
Morning, how are we?
I'm good. Will you tell us, first of all, how you discovered you had cancer?
Yeah, so I suppose it goes to just being a lump on my head, really, that I was kind of concerned about because it had been there quite a while. Other than that, kind of, I suppose the scary part is that I didn't feel anyway sick. So I had no other, I had no symptoms as such, which kind of, that's what I've highlighted to my friends, you know, you don't have to feel sick. Like this was ongoing and I felt fine. It was just the lump that was on my scalp.
And you went to a series of doctors, didn't you?
Yeah, so I did see a couple of doctors. However, the lump didn't start to change until it was biopsied. So before that, it kind of did appear to be a wart. It was flesh coloured. There was nothing really alarming. And I suppose when it did start to change, then they decided they were going to do a biopsy. So that probably would have been in November 2020.
And they came back from the biopsy and said what to you?
They said that it was very serious. They said that it was an aggressive form of melanoma and I'd immediately need to have another surgery on my scalp. So while they did that surgery, they also did a biopsy of the lymph nodes and discovered that they were also affected. So they did a dissection of my lymph nodes and the second surgery, I suppose, on my head. So that was part of the staging process. And then from there, we discovered that it had progressed. We just had to get on to treatment and things like that.
At what point did they tell you that it wouldn't be curable?
So we were quite hopeful. I always knew that it was stage 4 because shortly after that I had another surgery in December of a right hip replacement. So that was kind of when we realised it was stage 4 and it was incurable. But before realising that I was as sick as I was, we were quite hopeful as I was doing the immunotherapy but just didn't get the results that we had hoped from that.
And why did you need the hip replacement?
So overnight, it shows how aggressive, I suppose, the cancer is. Overnight, it actually had caused a fracture in my hip joint. So I went to sleep, had no pain, no nothing like that. And overnight, caused a fracture in my hip. And the next morning, couldn't walk or anything. So I was admitted then and had to have the hip replacement.
And when was that?
That was in December also. That was the 21st of December.
So does that mean that by December, the cancer was in the bone?
Yeah.
At what point then did you decide you were going to come home?
To be honest, my options over there were just because of coronavirus and things like that, they were actually working out better because they were still doing surgeries, whereas at home here, they were kind of putting a halt on things like that. So I did stay there for as long as I could until they told me, listen, if you want to go home to be with your family, you need to think about it now. Things have progressed and you won't be able to travel for much longer. So at that point, then I made the decision to come home.
And when you came home, as we stand now, what age is Noah?
Noah's 3.5.
And you and Noah are living with your family currently?
Yes, we moved back in with my mother just so she can help care for me.
What's your current health situation and what's your prognosis?
My prognosis is that I will have 3 to 5 months. And my current situation, I suppose, is just I have a lot of pain with the back. The back is the worst affected area at the moment. And I can no longer do any more radiation because it could cause a break. So I suppose my cancer is probably the worst part of it is the back.
It's in the spine, is it?
Yeah, so it's in about 9 of my vertebrae in my spine, which causes kind of issues with walking and things like that. So I do use a wheelchair.
And do you have much in the way of pain medication? Can you limit the pain?
Yeah, so I have a lot of pain medication that I have a palliative nurse that comes out to me daily. So what she does is I have a pump attached to me and she actually changes that daily. And that's to control nausea and also the pain.
You're 25 years of age?
25 years of age, correct, yeah.
How do you deal, can you deal with that prognosis, the age of 25?
It's definitely hard to process, but I feel like the time that I had in Australia, not being around family and things like that, gave me the time I needed to kind of process it. I don't think you'll ever come to terms with the prognosis, but you can deal with it as best you can. And I think I have done that. I've allowed myself all those dark, gloomy days and everything else. I've had a cry. I've, you know, been angry and everything. But you just have to get up and get on with things, to be honest. You know, you have to keep your best side out, and especially for my son, you know, so I try to do that.
But I think anybody listening to you, I mean, it's evident the level of courage in the way that you talk. But to be at 25 and to face the, not, I mean, setting aside the physical difficulties that you're now facing, the sheer unfairness and unjustification of having that prognosis. I don't know how you're able to just say, well, you have the cry and you deal with it. It must be horrendous.
It is. It's definitely horrendous. And I mean, I think about it a lot, you know, that I do feel robbed. And I think, you know, just Noah as well, he's been robbed of a lot, but I just try and deal with it as best I can. And look, that's all I can do. So I've started doing a lot of memories and things like that for Noah as well, and just making sure he has kind of things that he can see of me, you know, in years to come when I unfortunately won't be around, you know.
This interview obviously will be one of those, because it'll be available if he searches it in years to come. What do you want him to remember of you?
I just want him to know that I didn't accept kind of this care, and I fought as long and as hard as I could, you know, and I stood up to not being in this system that's slow and lacking in so many different places, you know. I want him to remember all of the nice things we did, of course, but just for this purpose, I suppose I want him to know that, you know, I stood up and I spoke, and I wanted better treatment, and I wanted to fight as much as I could to be here with him.
And that's because you've found the Irish healthcare system very unhelpful since you returned, isn't it?
Yeah, so I've just found it's been very slow, and there's a lot of breakdown in communication, and there's a lot of errors everywhere. I mean, if I have any pain crisis or things like that, I'm actually admitted through A&E, and I've just actually finished in the hospice where I had an admission of almost 7 weeks, and I mean, I came out at one point of that admission only to return again because I had picked up an infection in hospital. So I feel like I'm losing time also to the Irish healthcare system, because if I wasn't picking up these infections and things, I'd be able to be out and making memories with my son, you know.
And is it that the process even of getting admitted, the fact that you have to go through the laborious process of A&E and working your way into the system, delays things, makes it slower, makes it more difficult?
Yeah, it definitely does. It just, like, I've been told by my team that if I have any issues, I need to go in through the ambulance. So I have to call an ambulance every time, because previously I was sent for a scan and they were just so overcrowded and overrun that they didn't have time to do that scan. And it was very important. It was an urgent scan that needed to be done. But just I was sent home and told, come back in the morning. So they said, you know, you need to go in by ambulance, because they have to see you and they have to do these scans.
And can you tell me whether that's an issue to do with COVID and the impact it's had on the health system, or do you get the sense that that's how it always is?
Well, I have, prior to having this cancer, I have had a lot of admissions in hospital. I suppose I was just unlucky and have a poor immune system, but a lot of different admissions. And I can see that it's not just the cancer side of things that has fault, you know, it's fault across the board, and it has been for a very long time. It's just, I suppose now I'm in the cancer care, and I can just see that the vulnerable people just aren't being looked after, and it's causing a lot of issues, you know. I have met people since being home here in Ireland that, you know, have just been diagnosed and they're waiting on treatment, waiting on this, waiting on that, and it's just sad to see, because, I mean, it could make a real difference if they had got all of these treatments. Maybe, you know, maybe they'd be the difference between stage 3 and stage 4 patients. You just don't know.
We talked on the programme last week to people who were expert in the area of palliative care and who were palliative care providers. And some of the things that they talked about was the importance of giving people an insight into the process and where they're at, helping them with a plan for the process that they're facing into. Have you gone through that?
So I haven't had really that kind of discussion. I suppose I did have it in Australia. Australia's system was a lot better, to be honest, and a lot more efficient. So I had done a lot of that in Australia, and I've kind of been doing my own planning in the background. But as you said, it is important for me to know how far down the track I am and how far down the road, I suppose, just in order to be putting these plans in place. You know, it's crucial for me to know when I have such a short prognosis where I'm at, you know, and how my body is looking, because they say 3 to 5 months to me, and I feel good, but as I know from being diagnosed, it is something that's quite silent, and not always will your pain or your feeling reflect what's actually going on, you know.
But that must be a very difficult thing to do, because on the one hand you want to know so that you can plan for it, but on the other hand it has to be very difficult to read.
I mean, it is, but it's kind of, my attitude is, it's what's going on, and I just need to make the most of what I can. And even with the poor system, I just say, you know, we can still make a change here. I always try and look on the positive side. And I suppose just getting the response that I have from doing that article in the Western People has really been quite overwhelming, because just to think that I'm making a difference, or speaking up, and there's, you know, change happening, or there's talks happening even, it makes me very proud, you know, that maybe, no, I won't have to go through the same system. Maybe something will change, or even if that process has just started.
And what are the central tenets that you would like to see changed?
Well, I'd love to see that there is actually a cancer care facility set up in the west of Ireland. I speak about the West because obviously I'm from the West, but I'm sure all over the country they're struggling. But yeah, it's just, I think we need a specific facility where you can be admitted through the same process as A&E, but you're in a place where you're not susceptible to infection or to other viruses or bugs or things like that that are really deadly to us, you know.
And outside of the effects that you hope to have on the health system, in terms of that planning that you were talking about, what else do you want to get done in the coming months?
Well, I suppose outside of the medical thing, because there's not really much we can do from a medical standpoint besides scanning and just knowing where we're at. Up to the coming month, or in the coming months rather, I just hope to get a lot of work done for Noah. So I'm planning different things for him, photos and, you know, different letters and things like that, different things I can do for him so he has some memory of his mother, unfortunately.
Well, we hope it goes well for you, Maeve. Maeve, thank you so much for coming on. That is Maeve Fearick from Ballinrobe in County Mayo.
Thanks very much for having me.